ki namaste. So she has made my work easier. If it's an interactive session, it's very nice, it makes it easier. But if you want, by way of introduction, some few words, that is also fine. What would you prefer? There is a question, we can take it up right away. Okay, I understand. This is a old concept. We should not, we should move forward. Maya was put forward by yogis, and I am going to say something which may not be very likable to many. It was put forward by yogis who did not understand God's play. So it's like wishing it off. It is one of the concepts which has done most harm to Indian thought. It makes us feel the world is, anyways, it's meaningless, purposeless, it's an illusion. So escape from the illusion, which means good, bad, everything, come out of duality. What an egoistic, selfish escape is this? My nirvana, my moksha. I have read all the books on Maya and all the respectable names. So that is why we are here with Sri Aurobindo, because Sri Aurobindo says, see, Maya is one way of looking at it. Sri Krishna calls it Leela. Leela is not Maya. It's not illusion. It's a play of God. We don't understand the secret. And he calls it Leela because he goes beyond. See, the Maya comes if you take only two aspects of Brahman, the mutable and the immutable, the changing world and the unchanging divine reality. So the unchanging divine reality or reality or an impersonal shunyam, whatever we call it, there is no logic of this world in that. So because the world could not be explained, how is the infinite related to the finite? So it was, well, this is Maya. Don't try to understand it. Come out of it. Because if you are within it, you can't anyways understand it. You are caught in the wheel. Very logical, but very limited. And it hurts the heart's deeper intuition. I had this problem as an adolescent. I had read all the books, as many as I could lay hold on, all Shankaracharya, Swami Vivekananda, Sri Ramakrishna, and all the great ones. But at the end, it was moksha and maya. So if that is true, I should not be even waiting to practice medicine or listen to lecture. I should be actually taking sannyas if I am sincere. In fact, to go to the world and give a lecture that the world is illusion is itself a paradox. Whom are you be trying to awaken? There is no individual soul in its extreme. Advaita goes to that. So let's be done with this idea of Maya. Sri Krishna gives us a first hint that this world is a march, Lok Sangrahart, and Arjun, you must engage in it, because he brings in the third layer, Purushottama. You must align yourself to the will of the Purushottama. And he goes on to say, it is my Maya. It is not some mysterious, magical Miss Maya stepping into the play. How could it? If Brahman is omnipotent reality, how could Maya come and put a grahan over that? Except by its own permission. But then what is its origin? So Sri Krishna clarifies, my Maya. That's why he says you can't do that, your question, that you can't go par except by, there is a purpose it fulfills. And then Sri Krishna brings in yet third level. He says the world is a progressive manifestation of the divine. It's a Leela, but he qualifies it. Because Leela remains still a mysterious, except that, well, it's God's play. But what is this play? Why it is there? Why there is pain, suffering, etc.? So Sri Aurobindo makes it complete. He says it's a progressive manifestation of the divine. Then the difficulties and pain and struggle and challenges and attacks, they assume a different meaning. Give a small little example. When a child is given a, he is not writing well and he is asked by the teacher, to write the same line 10 times, the child may take it as punishment in ignorance. But a child who knows the teacher's intent, they say, my teacher wants to perfect me, as simple as that. He doesn't take it as a punishment. Or if, you know, they are wrestlers, must have seen their movies also made on wrestlers. So, the teacher is very tough. He doesn't let you, you know, rest, relax. He makes you really struggle for everything. But ultimately, the student knows. There's a famous song which came out. What is that? Papa, tu bada ho hai, something. Tu jalim hai ya bahut. You are not a very... Why? Because he is telling them, no, I am not going to spare you. So, when the daughter understands that what he means is not to trouble me, torture me, or make me suffer. He wants me to grow capable and strong. Otherwise, till now, we have explained away the play. And strangely and paradoxically, by karma, that's another big problem. At least I had a big problem. In ignorance, you do things and then you punish. And what a harsh punishment. After 100 lives, nobody tells us, what was your crime? And sometimes some stories are so strange. What was the crime? Because you pierced a butterfly. This is a story on Rishi Mandavya. So you have to suffer on a bed of nails whole night. Now this is a very unfair thing. A 5-year-old child has pierced through a butterfly. Okay, it's bad. But to suffer like that when he has become a sage. So we have to remove all these concepts. They are a big hindrance to understanding God's play. This world belongs to God, is God's, and something is happening here. And every challenge of life is to make us grow wiser and stronger. So the question should be not how to get out of suffering, but how to make the most of suffering. Not desire suffering, certainly not. But suffering will come. It's part of the play. How to minimize it? Yes. If you become wiser without the blow, so much better. If you look at it, since the subject is protection, just I'll slightly take a detour. So many for this journey through the world through which we grow, the soul grows, it has been provided 5 layers of protection. The first is the body itself. See, after death, vital goes into all kinds, it's nothing scattered. But the physical body is a protection. If you keep it in a nice way, healthy way, karma or no karma, you will stay healthy by and large. Because you have taken care of. This is the first layer of protection. Balance, moderation, all these, need not get into it. Even senses, which is the life of entanglement, even they give you a very first clue. Too much sound or something, they give you a clue, it's painful. How do senses tell us what is dangerous for us? Is by sounds. People can pick up. And even nature warns you. Rattlesnake, it literally says, please don't get near me. Almost all the animals. And if you can train these ears, eyes, senses are the first layer. We have lost it. I mean, even people get to know about tsunamis and also protection. At most material level, we have been provided. Not complete. And there is a reason for it. Because then you stop evolving. Like what Western world tried to make your life very comfortable. That is Hiranyakashipu's gospel. All outer conditions I will control. So, does that mean you won't have problems? No, you'll have problems. You have to face. Because they are part of the growth process. So, but that's what they did. And we know the results now, weakening of immunity and all this. That's a different story. Second layer, even the vital, the life energy is a protection. Provided we use it robustly, but we throw it away. That's why one of the practices advised was brahmacharya. If you keep the life energy intact, it becomes strong. People like Bhishma and all these people, you see, how they could stay healthy. They knew how to regulate the life energy. They had children, everything is there. But they didn't just throw it out. Now you see, there are so many avenues for throwing the life energy. If nothing else, chit-chat. Waste of life energy. So life energy, which is the second layer of protection, is gone. Then there is the mind. The mental will is something very powerful. If it develops, you know, Queen Elizabeth, when she is on the deathbed, what does she do? She says, but death can wait. My people are suffering. Bhishma, on the bed of arrows, no, I am not going to die right now. I will wait for the whole result and the Uttarayan. Mental will, so powerful it can be. But again, we somehow encourage thoughts of doubts, impotence. Again, my karma, I have to suffer. But the mental will is something. Even if you have to go through it like a lion, not like a weak lamb. So mental will, third layer of protection. And then there is the rati itself. The soul is the jyotirmay, luminous. It's not just a... Shobindu says soul is not just going from one body to another. If you see, they show sometimes cinematically, soul is leaving one body, going to another. What is it doing? It's just as if, you know, poor fellow. It's powerful. Shobindu says the soul in man is greater than his fate. That's the story of Nala Damayanti. That is the story of Sita. That's the story of Savitri. That's the story of Draupadi. That there is something in us which is so powerful that it can overturn all the forces of nature, fate, and take the challenge and rise above them. So we have to discover this fellow sitting inside. So this is the fourth layer of protection. The soul is very powerful. Mother goes on to say, you don't leave the body till the soul says yes. Even a god of death, if he comes, he has to ask. Because it's divine's child. Nobody can just touch it like that. And the fifth layer, the greatest layer, is the divine grace and love. We don't invoke, we have forgotten to pray. This is the civilizational disease. We are so ready. Tomorrow, I don't know, probably we'll rush to AI for my prayer. Prayer comes from the heart. It's my hotline to the divine. And that prayer can take two forms. It can be a mute prayer, just a state. You have fallen, you are unconscious. But something within us can still pray. In whom? Those who have the habit, who have formed this daily training. Mother, this is my day beginning. Mother, this is how it is going. Mother. So then what happens? There is a natural state inside at the first response to any challenge is prayer. It need not even be prayer, it's just mother. She knows. There are beautiful Hindi bhajans also to that. That Gajgraha, that story of the elephant who is caught by the crocodile. He doesn't know Hindi, English, Sanskrit, nothing. He doesn't have time to think, what shall I, which Sanskrit prayer? Nothing. He just trumpets in pain. And the divine comes and releases him. So there is a prayer even in mute matter. So to learn to pray. But even if we have never prayed, suddenly a prayer can help. Arth, Prarthana. But it's very good if every day we pray. And not just as a ritual, day and night, morning. Turn life into a prayer. A beautiful thing and such a beautiful connection with the Divine Mother. And other form it can take, of course, is mantra. Mother speaks about it. She says the difference between those who have the mantra and who do not have the mantra. And this having the mantra is not somebody gives us from outside. It's a mantra which springs up in the heart. It need not be in Sanskrit. It may be in simply words, Ma, my Lord. It can be any word which gives us connection. She says the shorter it is, the better it is. Because if you have long mantra, repeating it, but it's okay, you can do. But a connection, that's the mantra is what makes a line from Savitri. Anything. So this mantra, sometime during a moment of crisis or in the course of a journey, springs up within. Something which makes us feel deeply connected. It's our mantra given to us. And then we have the mantra siddhi by living it, practicing it. So this way we protect ourselves. But there is a greater danger than Maya and all. See, the biggest danger of Maya, Maya since you mentioned, that's why I'm using that. Biggest danger is not from outside. Atmaneva atmano, what is it? Bandhu. Atmaiva atmano bandhu. Atmaneva ripur atmana. The self is the enemy of the self. That is very difficult to even recognize. This is the Trojan horse which opens the door. People say adverse forces, hostile forces. And then they start seeing in human beings. So question is, who opened the door within you? That's the only thing relevant. Because even if you get over this now, and there are ways to get over, but somebody will open the door. So that is the one we have to discover. So what opens the door to now within us to attacks and downfalls? Of course, number one, the head of all this is ego. Me, mine. If we have a want, we should be ready for suffering. The moment you have desire, suffering is round the corner. Today or tomorrow it will come. If you seek pleasure, pain will come. This is how we understand the arrangement of Maya and dualities. But it's a grace so that we don't get stuck in comfort zones. That's the mechanism of nature. That we can never be comfortable in a limited comfort zone. It's a grace. We have to understand that, oh, it has come to remind me that Sugriv, you are lying awake enjoying life, Lakshman will come and throw you out of the kingdom. Then he realizes, no, I have a work to do. So Maya is not here to make us suffer. It is here to make us awaken after giving the experience of world step by step. Because we are not ready straight away for the Lord of Maya. Because in all his splendor, beauty, light, power, how can we behold? So it takes us from one layer to another, temporary, we may use the word illusions. They are not illusions in the sense of a non-reality. It's illusion in the sense of mistaking a limited, finite truth for the ultimate. That's the big problem. Or a distortion of the reality. In that sense, Maya operates. Slowly we go. Like a child has to be taken from kindergarten to PhD. Till we are ready to surrender ourselves. But on the journey from within, the biggest danger is ego. And that's why Mother says, lack of humility opens the doors to every downfall. Spiritual ego. I am a realized person. I am an instrument of God. All these things. I am someone great. Now we need not say, but if inside it is there. So humility, what is humility? Not before others, oh, I am nothing, you know, nothing. It's to know inside that I am nothing. In fact, God is everything. It is to know this knowledge inside. And how much ever one may know, there is infinity before you. So this is what humility is. How much ever power one may have or whatever one may have, it's nothing compared to the divine. It always makes us humble. The second is vigilance. See, that's how falsehood operates. First we become unconscious that I am opening the door to the devil. And then it starts making us justify. Several reasons. Social reasons. God knows how many reasons. Communist is social. What can we do? We are living life. So, you know, as if others have not faced. So, what to do? Okay, we are living life. We have to be in society. But do we have to attend every marriage? I am just putting it on base. And go there with all the ostentatious gifts. Living life, but we can at least minimize. Do we have to pick up every call and speak for half an hour to chacha, tau, tau ki ladki ka bua ka mausa wahan par, and all this in the name of sambandh bana ke rakhna hai. This is nonsense. We should look at it like this. This is not. So we are opening through these interactions to all the forces. When we talk on phone or to people, we are opening doors. Whatever is in their consciousness is now going to come into us. We have made ourselves vulnerable. It's not that we should not talk. Of course, this world, we are speaking everything, but we should not, you know, minimum necessary. People will leave us. Very good. Divine will be there. He is waiting to become our permanent friend. So vigilance, to know where I can make progress, that is also vigilance. And third most important thing, shield against attacks from within is sincerity. Instead of being busy looking at faults of the others, we should look within ourselves, not as faults and sin, or no, that is not spiritual, or guilt, but where am I deviating from the true movement? Within, if we look carefully, we will see it. That no, I am getting into something which is not quite aligned to my own goal, and to gently, not with violence or force, gently set the course right. So there is attacks from outside, but most importantly there is the inner attacks who forces that open the door, with the elements which open the doors. Simple thing like a sexual activity, it opens the door, you see. After that, people, one feels so dull, almost unconscious. After that momentary pleasure, there is a downfall. Now nobody is saying that one day suddenly you wake up and you will master it. But regulate it slowly. Know the direction one has to go. Anger opens the door because those vibrations. Fear opens the door. Fear is the biggest enemy. So why all this jigsaw puzzle or challenges are created by Maya? So that by the time we have tackled it, we have done graduation. When we have gone through this puzzle of Maya, then Maya says, okay, you are now qualified to go to Shakti, the Divine Mother. Then only we are delivered from ignorance to knowledge. Not as this is now, we understand the place. So it's no more illusion and get rid of it. No, we understand why it is there. So then we can help the march of mankind because we have gone through the process. So when someone comes, we know how to support. We have compassion. All this comes. Not like this is an illusion, get out of it, and nice intellectual theories. So then we understand Maya also belongs to the Lord. So that's why we have the concept of two kinds of Maya. Nowadays we don't speak about it, which is very surprising. In modern Vedantic discourse, even by big Swamijis, use the word Maya. But in ancient tradition, there always was Avidyamai Maya and Vidyamai Maya. And the Isha Upanishad speaks about it. Vidyancha Vidyancha Yast Dvedo Bhayam Saha. So both Avidya is to live in separative consciousness. Consciousness of division. Born out of ignorance. Me, this, that and everything is required at a stage of evolution. When the individuality is being formed, it's required because there is the truth of the individual soul. Otherwise there will be no need of all this. And when we have gone through the school of Avidya with headmaster as death, and teachers as pain and suffering, and pleasure also, pleasure and pain are the teachers. We like, today is Mr. Pleasure's class, so nice. Don't worry, after that the strict Miss Pain will also come, or Mr. Pain. Then you get awards, suffering or some gift. This is the stage of schooling. Then a time comes when we are out of the school of Maya into the school of the Divine Mother. There the teacher is a growth in joy, freedom, light. The teachers are different degrees of light, different degrees of joy, different degrees of freedom. So we are all here to enroll ourselves in the school of the Divine Mother, or are already enrolled rather. And its headmaster, the most unusual headmaster, is Sri Aurobindo, the Lord. He is not a school teacher or a master. He is like, he just carries us. It's okay. We have gone through your quota. So that's how we have to look at it. And the only way to come out of this is what the Gita has given. Sri Aurobindo says at one place, he says, you cannot slay Maya because it is the Maya of the Lord. But you can slay Moha, wrong attachment to the objects of the senses. So how do we deal with this world of finite forms? By knowing, at least start with an intellectual conception, then an insistent idea, then a living faith, then a conscious vision and experience and aspiration that the divine is in all. All is in the divine. And the divine is the all. There is nothing else but the divine. Now if we live with this idea, it's like a capsule of light. One day the idea takes us to its origin and the truth appeared. That's how one goes beyond Maya. One realizes behind every finite form, it is the divine manifesting through diversity. That's his original plan. Eko ham bahushyam. Then there is no quarrel. You cannot be like me. You should not be like me. If you are like me, it's a problem. Cloning. In fact, then one rejoices in diversity, because it's so nice that the divine is expressing himself differently in you and differently in me. Here you will see in Sri Aurobindo devotees. There is no standard pattern. Right from beginning, you take some of those big names right in the beginning. Champaklalji, Pranabda, Vasudhaben, then... Sahana Di, Uta Di, Nalani Da, Amrita, Pranabda, Pavitra, Navjat, all of them are unique. It's very interesting. Sometimes they can't, they are so different. And the mother is dealing with each one differently. No standard pattern. Because the divine enjoys diversity. Fundamental truths are there, of course. But otherwise, the guidance for each one is meant to manifest a different expression of the divine. In Buddha, the divine will is go out, seek the solution to suffering and misery. He leaves the kingdom. That is how the divine will is in him. In Arjuna, the divine will is fight, conquer. So when we understand this, then Maya is no more an delusion or an illusion, but she begins to become a helpful friend. Like, you know, when you are a child in kindergarten, some people like some teachers, they are afraid of other teachers. But the same child, when he grows up and comes back to the school, things change. We all have that experience, I have at least, going back to the school. Oh! Then the teacher says, you know, I know I used to trouble. No, no, sir, we enjoyed it a lot. We thank you so much. Isn't it? That's a real experience. So the same thing applies here. Okay? So I think I've just touched upon an overview from Maya to the Mayapati. Yes, please. Okay, now you have said, what is the difference between karma, fate, and destiny? So karma is, of course, commonest language is action. But what is action? Action is because of an impulsion. Any action. Newton's laws. Something has to impel you. So Indian thought understood this. In Western jurisprudence, you see the action. In ancient Indian jurisprudence, you didn't see the action as much as the impelling force, the motive. Motive is the dharma part. So if there is dharma behind karma, everything is fine. If there is ego behind karma, then you need to learn the lesson. That's as simple as that. Original impulsion, as Sri Krishna says, is he himself, karma visarga. He is the one who impels this creation. So meaning thereby, the whole law of karma, karma siddhant, is to teach us and train us to tune ourselves to the divine will. This whole logic, not reward, punishment, but consequences, learning, growth, until we realize, reach that point, and we have to reach that point not mechanically or outwardly, where we say ultimately, let thy will be done. That point, the consciousness, the individual soul has to reach, where it hands over itself completely in the hands of the divine. Then the task of karma is over. Once you have handed over to the divine, then the divine takes charge. I'm saying in earnest, if honest, not like I surrender myself to you. And when the divine takes charge, then karma has no more any consequence. That's why Sri Krishna says in the Gita, sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam raja. Then he says, aham tva sarva papebhyo moksha shami ma sucha. It doesn't matter. You are killing and all this. Traditional people will say, how can you say that? You are killing. Killing is killing. But Sri Krishna says, no, you won't have the stain. Because now you have gone from the responsibility of the doership. Action is happening, but you know that you are no more the doer. The whole knot of karma is the sense of doership, the ego. I am the doer. So karma binds. As long as you are the doer, you have to take responsibility. As simple as that. But when you are no more the doer, because the ego has been quietened, and the divine has taken charge, it's a process. It's not like one day we can talk about it. Then slowly, slowly he begins to take charge. Then one cannot act under the impulsion of the ego. One no more experiences the frustrations, anger, desires which impel us to action. One is in a state of constant inner peace and joy and is impelled by the divine impulsion. Then there is no karma bandhan. What is fate? Same thing. Fate and destiny are a little different. Fate is whatever, and karma is not just physical action, thoughts, feelings, will, the whole gamut of thing inside which push us. Outer action, we all know, is only the a doctor who pickpockets. I'm a doctor, so I can. A doctor who pickpockets people by throwing fear of disease is also giving the same medicine. And people are getting well. Not that medicine won't. And a doctor who is doing it with a genuine state of inner compassion. Karma is same outwardly, but there is a world of inner difference. So all this inner and outer mechanism are picked up by the forces in creation. And there are three main forces of fate as described. Feminine powers. They are very good at picking up details, huh? You can't fool. See my actions. Ah, no, I know. I don't go by your words. I know what you are feeling inside. They pick up those details. And then they weave your fate. The beginning of something, the continuation, and then the culmination. And then when they weave your fate, it is up to the gods and the cosmic powers to execute it. They will create scenes, circumstances, everything. But behind it is the heart of love, which is to, and the divine will walk with us. Anytime it can change. You suddenly realize, oh, I had taken a wrong turn. Lord help me. Okay, come. So there are several loops, if we can conceive mentally, interconnecting loops. You are moving on a curve at any point of time. Because divine is always walking with everyone, even the depths of darkness. So there are intersections from where you can suddenly be lifted into that. You don't have to go through this whole loop. That is fate. Fate is the working out of truth in ignorance. Working out toward the same thing, but in ignorance. So it's basically forces that are governing our life, but we don't understand them. So we try Rahu and Ketu and everything, but we don't understand the cosmic forces. But it is not as simple as that. Because they have been woven by the thread of karma, and these cosmic forces also obey fate. But the divine can any time intervene. That's how many of these prayers and pujas work, because deep inside we think God is listening, though we are going through the gods. But we need not. We can directly connect to the Supreme. That's the distinction which Sri Krishna himself says in the Gita. That if you pray to the lesser power, still I am the one who grants. That's what he says, the difference. So this is one part. So destiny is the most interesting term. So fate is working out of truth in ignorance. What is destiny? Destiny is destination. So just now before coming, someone was telling me, sometimes you come and journey is very arduous. It's heat, train is late, flight gets cancelled, all problems are there. The person was describing. I can understand, it's not easy. I travel so much, I know what it means. So when the person kept on describing it, at the end I said, pahunch gaye na? Pahunch gaye na? You have reached. That is destiny. So Sri Aurobindo says, O king, fate is truth working in ignorance. O king, the events that meet thee on the road, though they smite thy body and soul with joy and grief, are not thy fate. What are they? They are circumstances. So what is really fate? Then he says, the road, the goal thou choosest. Now here fate gets a different meaning altogether. So when we talk about fate as event circumstances, when we talk as fate as ultimately, so when Sri Aurobindo says what is the fate of mankind, he's talking about the destination. In between there may be nuclear war, it doesn't matter. So destiny is the ultimate, where fate is going to lead you, the last stop of the train. His destiny, his destiny. We use that even in English, that's how you use. Array, his destiny is like this, to suffer always. Fate is, oh fellow, he met with an injury, he met this, that is. So that is a subtle distinction, interchangeable terms. But actually our own will, fate is woven by our own inner things. It's not like arbitrary. We are not conscious of many things happening inside us. But there are beings in this universe who pick up. Agents of Chitragupta and agents of Indra. And they weave fate. Web of fate. And again, not to punish us or reward us, but to help us grow. That's how it is. Okay? Any other? Please ask.
Who carries the fate to the next world?
Okay, please sit. Who carries the fate? In the body. Okay. Through lives. So obviously, that's one of the big problems with Buddhist thought. Anatmavad. Though it tries to explain it in a very interesting way, but I'll not go into metaphysical. That's like a stream which is continuing, but there is no individual soul. But the moment we say that fate is carried or karma is carried, then individual soul is something which is permanent, lasting, which doesn't die with the death of the body. It's understood. So, individual soul carries it. So, how does it carry it? What is it that it carries? So, I'll give you an example. Supposing today, regardless of our age, if I suddenly ask, tell me about your life. Life may be 40 years, 50 years gone, no? Most of us. Can we speak for 50 years now? I'm a psychiatrist. I hear people's lives. And with all my patience, sometimes 1 hour, 1.5 hours. After that, you don't know what to say. Because you are looking at incidents. Then I zero in. Okay, tell me the 10 most important incidents that deeply touched you. Now you see, life is running in moments. You know what? Once when I went to this forest and you know, suddenly there was this river and I felt an aha moment. It had nothing to do with the temple. It had nothing to do with anything mantra. And we felt a deep godlike state touch us. They are called psychic moments. I remember one in Chabua during my posting. And, not posting, sorry, temporary duty. It's in northeast. It's so vivid. Oh, just a young flight lieutenant. And I stepped out of my room in the morning on 1st January. Everybody had gone on the party, but obviously I didn't go. 1st January, I had no clue what is New Year and all this importance. Suddenly as I stepped out, I saw the sun through the trees. Now, it's not uncommon in northeast, very common sight. But something happened. I still remember that experience very vividly. And I can't categorize it, I saw God, nothing. But that is so deep imprinted. So there are psychic memories that we carry. Suddenly people come to the ashram and say, oh, I am home. In spite of all the unfortunately unwelcome sometimes people standing at the gate, I'm sorry. Or in the dining room, come. All kinds of people are everywhere. Still you feel it is home and come back. Isn't it? Why? Now this is a psychic memory. Psychic memory need not mean that previous life you had come with the mother. It means that the same divine mother in some life, in whatever life, physically, we were connected to her. And so the soul recognizes she is the divine mother. I have played with her. I have grown up with her. Shivinda speaks about that when he was asked, why do we have come? Why? How come we have come? One of them is saying, he says physical relation with the mother in previous life, mother or myself in previous lives. Another is bhakti in previous lives, bearing fruit now. So there is a trail of psychic memories where is the true secret of karma is there. But also to reach that point, we need certain experiences. As I said, as a training course. Otherwise I'll come to ashram, I'll stay here. After 10 days I'll be the same old monkey. Old nature will come back. I'll say, oh, my friend is in Japan or America and you know, people talk like that, you know, you should be very careful. Shivinda speaks about the human atmosphere. Don't much, you know, get into, sit at the samadhi, go to see and some people whom you know really, otherwise you'll meet that. Why? Because body is here, but we have not gone through those experiences. Someone asked the mother, it seems Rani Lakshmi Bai's horse had taken a rebirth and then come here. And people say he even spoke like a horse, walked like one. He said, mother, I want an American wife. 35, 40. Mother said, not in this life. After 2 days he died. So now, what is the difference? Psychic memory, psychic touch means this is my destination. But to reach there, certain experiences are needed which have not been finished in one life. We started something, but a concealed ambition, maybe a concealed opportunity, maybe a creative surge, but various things. No, human life is full of all kinds of things. Maybe one came here, did not marry, and deep inside thought, oh, I wish I could have a child. Now the beauty is, if you are sincere, the divine will make you go through it without really the physical child. That is also there. But if such is not the case, if the urge is very strong, obviously you can't have a child in the ashram. Even that mother is allowed. Even there is a couple of children who became an ashram inmate right away. But that's a different story. Her action is in freedom. But okay, you have to sort it out. So people take rebirth. Sometimes they go through tremendous suffering. If now you have touched this core, story of Ishadi, how much she suffered in this life. But it is said that she was the reincarnation of Mrinalini Devi. She suffered because when she got married, it was tremendous suffering. Right? Finally, she came here, and Sri Aurobindo had given her this special boon, the vision to see, communicate with him. So there is, every time the psychic gate opens, you can leap into it. Otherwise, that memory gets imprinted. So karma itself is many layered, what I am trying to say is. But there are other imprints, unfinished. These imprints are something as Arya, I wish, but this imprint has remained as an imprint. You don't have the experience of it, what it means as an essential lesson. Because I may be thinking, oh, it is such a great joy in America life or in a rich family. But I don't know, you are bound hand to mouth, hand to feet, not mouth. Mouth is open. But when you are born in a rich family, you can't just suddenly stop at a golgappa dukan on the way and say, hello, I want to have golgappa. You can't just talk like a commoner to anyone. It's a painful life, no? So, but if you are in a commoner household, you are a free person. So you realize, oh my God, I am not free. I have to follow so many things. Family norms, social norms, what kind of a life? So that experience teaches us. It's not reward and punishment. And the closer the time comes for your psychic life awakening, the greater these karma will, because they will come like overwhelming to go through all the quick pain, catharsis, all this. So lives which are very close to divine often undergo most severe sufferings. It's necessary as a purification process. So there are two layers in which karma operates. One part is in that layer of the soul, which is called as true vital, where experiences have been integrated with the soul. That's how the soul grows. So psychic memories. Psychic memories are not like in my previous life, I was, you know, this big man and then I did this. This is all nonsense. Everybody was a big man. You don't hear anybody that I was a, you know, robber or criminal. Everybody. You see, psychic, this is all fantasy. It was your desire, wishes which are unfulfilled. Now they are in that regression, they are coming out. It's okay. There is second layer outside the true vital, which is a true psychic. So psychic itself has psychic mental, psychic vital, psychic physical, true. So it's called as true mental, true physical, true vital. And then there is the inner being, where all this flux is going on. So now that's where the karmic consequences, laws are being worked out. That goes with the psychic as some imprints. And they have, those imprints are enough, like, they are not like detailed, elaborate things, but like a chip, computer chip, zip file. The day you touch it, it will open up. One couldn't resolve the problem of jealousy. Now in next life, suddenly something happens. And you don't know what to do. You are invaded by jealousy from every side. So they are imprints which are like a zip file. At the right moment, that's where all the karmic gods operate. They will suddenly touch, put the secret code, and that file opens. Call it Sanchit, whatever we want to use. They are terminologies, they don't explain much. So the Sanchit karma begins to operate. And then of course there is the prarabdha, which is all this is in the, which is happening today. And then there is utkat. But the divine grace can completely cancel all this. That's where, just as Sri Krishna's promise, sarva dharman parityaja, the mother says the divine grace can completely annul karma. It knows ultimately what was all this for reaching there. So that's why there is an ordinary protection which is granted to everybody, this five layered. And there is a special protection for those who have surrendered themselves completely. And mother has spoken about it. It can't be compared. Those who have given themselves completely to the divine, a special grace walks with them. So that is the difference. You can work through it in 10 lives or in one life. That's what yoga is about, and that's what the divine grace does it. Because ultimately thing is that you have to learn this lesson. It will take you fast forward, holding in your lap on a bullet train. You won't even realize that how you have crossed that valley of suffering which otherwise few lives would have been needed to work through. Okay, I think that completes. Yes, please.
What is the difference between prevention and protection?
Prevention and protection. Excellent. So prevention is, to ensure that nothing which is adverse, harmful, can ever hit. It cannot come near. Protection is, if it comes near, what can you do about it? So in spiritual terms, I can take an example. Name of God is the biggest prevention. May use the word protection, but it doesn't let anything come. In Hanuman Chalisa, we have a line. What is that? Japata nirantar hanumat veera. What is that? Before that? Sankat kate mite sapira, japata nirantar hanumat veera. Bhut pishach nikat nahi aave. Mahavir jab naam sunave. When you have the name of God, they won't come near. Those fellows know you are a VVIP. Protection is, it has come near because you opened the gate, something happened, and you can sense the danger. Ideally, even then, go within and call the mother's name. As simple as that. But if you can't do that, at least make sure that the consciousness is not projected outside, it projected inside. What is projected outside, you become vulnerable. Project, my God, what is going to happen? So many things project us outside. One classic example. You have come to a spiritual place or place like here, and you assume that mother's protection grace is there, but you are enjoying an ego trip. You mean because something of yours is happening, some event, you are thinking about oneself. So what is happening? Consciousness is externalized. When it is externalized, we are very vulnerable. One moment of unconsciousness and these forces will take it. So that's where one should ensure that if something like that, you have engaged in a heated, animated discussion, for example, one has gone out of protection, or there has been a lot of ego games, ambition, one has gone out of protection. So then one should ensure that before one really takes the next thing, stay quiet, offer it to her, invoke her, tell her, mother, stupid fellow. So that's how one then proceeds. Prevention is ma, 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 nothing will come near. Protection is all these mechanisms which operate. Protection is of several levels, that's what I was saying. Ultimate level, external level, all these things. Unconsciousness is one of the biggest challenges with regard to protection. Unconsciousness opens the door. It's conscious in everything, even something like walking, physical actions. And falsehood is another, fear is another, all these will open the door. So one should see that if one has fear, one is vulnerable. One should know that. So then call the protection by whatever means. Okay, maybe one last probably question. Yeah, please sit down.
So in connection to the last session, Hemadi watched a sad story. If any of our close relatives, say our spouse, falls critically ill, and we pray Mother for the protection, she also showers the protection and the person comes out of it. But after a few days, if the person passes away, what could be the reason?
Exactly. Quite correct. So protection is a comprehensive package, and Mother describes that. It's not about only about coming back. It's also actually after death you need a lot more, because you are open now, the body is not there. So see, we cannot change anybody's destiny, because as I said, it's a very complex web through which life moves. So when we call for protection, it means that while you are in the body, you had to go through, let's say, lot of suffering. It is minimized. And even through the suffering, you felt the sense of a protecting hand. And when you leave the body, you are carried safely through the journey. In her case, I was deeply involved because of the All India magazine. And I saw a very brave girl, of course. But I knew the husband very well. So I saw that how he was being carried, and last couple of days, how, you know, at one level he understood, and he was, I mean, somebody would have been in extreme agony. And what is more important was, she may not have said, but since he has shared the life, I can share a little bit. See, who gets the greatest impact? Wife and the child. Child is a very young child, no, when all this happened. How the child has blossomed so well is one of the best children in the school. He could have been impacted, gone into depression. He even felt his presence. He felt Mother supporting him through all this. So one hand, there is the inevitable part of destiny. The other hand is all those who are connected, because you have invoked the grace, even for herself. Of course, she is very courageous, but to come out this way and not only take up at a young age, you know, to go through all this. So it operates at several levels. And here we must understand one thing, that Mother will answer all prayers is like divine, like an ATM machine. It doesn't work. And obviously, because the divine is not just a genie in the bottle. Divine doesn't act like that. Divine acts with the omniscience. He knows what is really best. For us, death is worst. Okay? What if the divine knows that now is his opportunity and her opportunity to grow in certain ways for which they need to be away? And it's painful to start with, but very soon they both are going to evolve beautifully. Now, if the divine is able to foresee, which he obviously is, why would he hold the action? He would still act. Like in Kurukshetra field, he liberated so many, Karna, etc., from things which they had to take another body. Necessary. So he does what is best, but when we invoke the divine grace, certain things will go through, certain things will be cancelled, certain things will be mitigated, certain things we have no choice but to go through for various reasons, not getting into that. But when we go through taking the divine's name, invoking the grace, we will go through it with minimum scarring, damage, or both the departed and the person who is left behind, which is where we should look at it. It won't happen that everything we ask that get fulfilled. That won't be God, frankly speaking. That would be a genie in the bottle, and I personally would be very afraid of going to such a God who is granting all my ignorant wishes. All the great mystics have said this. Kabir went on to say that in my ignorance I ask you many things, but you are the all wise. Grant only those things which are good for me. Okay, I think we can close here. Thank you so much. Okay. Jai Ma.